Jacob and Laban strike a bargain. "Speak now, guest," said the master of the house after drinking, "and unfold to me the particulars of thy life." So Jacob related to him all things in detail as they had fallen out, and according to the facts. At most, he somewhat glozed over the precise circumstances of the encounter with Eliphaz, though even here, since his poverty and nakedness were eloquent enough, he gave honor to the truth. From time to time, in convenient sections, he interrupted his tale and gestured towards Abtsheba, who then translated. Laban drank a great deal of beer during the process, listening dourly and sometimes nodding his head. Jacob spoke with objectivity. He did not characterize as either good or evil the late happenings between him, Esau, and their parents. He merely narrated, freely and God-fearingly, for he could afford to let everything rest upon the one great decisive fact before which his present nakedness paled into insignificance, that he, and none other, was the bearing of the blessing. Laban listened, blinking furiously. He had sucked so industriously upon his straw that his face was like the late and waning moon when it rises red and threatening on the horizon, and his belly was swollen so that he unloosed his girdle, let down his coat from his shoulders, and sat in his shirt, with his muscular arms crossed on the half-naked, grizzled breast. He sat humped upon his bed, and put questions, the questions of a practical and practiced businessman, about this blessing of which his interlocutor boasted. He, Laban, was not prepared to swallow it whole. He had his doubts. The blessing was not wholly innocent, he felt. Jacob had brought it out clearly enough that Esau was definitely the man of the curse, and he himself the man of the blessing. But, considering how the blessing had been acquired, he, Laban, felt that some curse was bound up with it, which must make itself felt in the end. Everybody knew how the gods were. They were all alike. The local ones, with whom Laban naturally kept in good odor, as well as the vague and unnamed ones belonging to Isaac's people, whom likewise he conditionally recognized, the gods willed and compelled human acts. But the guilt, therefore, was man's. The possession, upon which Jacob rested his case, was weighted with guilt. The question was, who was the guilty party? Jacob assured him of his own innocence. He himself, he said, had scarcely done anything. He had merely let happen what had to happen, and even that with great personal compunctions. The guiltiest party was the energetic Rebecca, who had arranged everything. "Upon me be the curse, my son," she had said, meaning, of course, in case the father had seen through the deception. But her words expressed her relation to the whole affair, the responsibility she had taken upon herself, and her maternal acceptance of her son's innocence. "Yes, maternal," said Laban. The drink made him breathe heavily through his mouth, and his body sagged forward and sideways. He pulled himself up, then sagged over on the other side. "Maternal, the way mothers are, and parents, and the way gods are." Parents and gods displayed their partiality in the same questionable way. Their blessing was power, and its source was power. For love, too, and in particular love, was sheer power, and gods and parents blessed their favorites, out of love for them, with a life of power, made them powerful in good and evil. That was the way of it, and that was the blessing. On my head the curse. That was only talk, a mother's prattle, ignoring the fact that love was power, and blessing power, and life power, and that was all there was to it. But after all, Rebecca was only a female, and Jacob was the bearer of a blessing in whose possession guilt was involved. "Upon thee will the guilt be visited," said Laban, thick-tongued, pointing with his heavy hand and arm at his nephew. "Thou hast betrayed, and thou shalt be betrayed. Abtsheba, stir thy chaps and tell him all that, thou villain. I bought thee for 20 shekels, and if thou sleepest instead of interpreting, I will leave thee a week buried to the upper lip in the earth, thou gawk." Hold, and shame upon thee, said Jacob, and spat upon the ground. Doth my father and brother curse me? What then hast thou in thy head? Am I not thy flesh and blood? That art thou, answered Laban, so far as that goes. Thou hast told me of Rebekah and Isaac and Esau the Red, and thou art Jacob, my sister's son, as thou hast proven. I embrace thee, but the case must be thought of in the light of all thy words, and the consequences drawn for thee and me according to the laws of trade and husbandry. I am convinced of the truth of thy reports, yet have I no ground to praise thy sincerity, since to explain thy state thou hadst no recourse but truth. And it tallies not with thy first statement that Rebekah sent thee to me to pay me a respect, for it was rather for the sake of thy not abiding at home, where thy life was in danger from Esau because of thine and thy mother's deed, which I deny not was crowned with much success, yet did it make thee for the time a naked beggar. Thou camest to me not of thy free will, but because thou hadst else no place to lay thy head. Thou wast given to me, and therefrom follows the consequence. Thou art not guest, but servant in my house. My uncle speaks with justice, yet not mingling with it the salt of love, said Jacob. Words, said Laban, I speak with the natural harshness that governs the life of trade, and by it I am accustomed to govern my actions. The bankers in Haran are two brothers, sons of Isulanu. They can demand of me what they will, because I have pressing need of their water, and that they know. So they demand as it pleaseth them, and if I cannot comply, then they will sell me and my possessions and their gains. No man can afford to be a fool. Thou art sent to me, and I will use thee. I am not rich enough nor bear a blessing that I should indulge myself in charity and keep open house for all the homeless. Of pairs of arms to labor for me I have but his here, who hath no more strength than a toad, and Iltani, the maid, who hath the brains of a chicken and of a cackling hen. For the potter is a journeyman, and I have contracted with him for only 10 days, and when it is the time of harvest or of shearing, I know not whence the workers will come, for I cannot pay them. For long hath it been unfitting that Rachel, my daughter, keepeth the sheep and suffereth heat by day and frost by night. That shalt thou do for lodgment and herbs and nothing more, for thou knowest not whither to go, and art not a man to right conditions. This is the state of the matter. Gladly will I tend the sheep for thy child Rachel's sake, said Jacob, and serve for her, that her life may be soft. I was born a shepherd, and I can breed the sheep, and have understanding of all things. I had it never in mind to play the idler, and be a useless mouth to thee. But since I hear that it is for Rachel thy child, and that I can replace her strength with the strength of my man's arms, I am twice glad to serve. Stands it so? Asked Laban, shooting a glance across at him and blinking hard, while the corner of his mouth went down. Good, said he. For well or ill, thou must, for the conditions of the business life compel thee. But if thou dost so gladly, that is an advantage to thee without being a harm to me. And tomorrow we shall make the contract.
Seest thou, said Jacob, it can come to pass that there are advantages which advantage both sides and make soft the natural harshnesses. That wouldst thou not have believed. Thou wouldst not mingle with thy justice the salt of love, so have I given thee of mine, naked and nothing as I stand at this moment before thee.
Words, words, Laban finished for him. We will write down the contract and seal it, that all may be in order, and no one may assail it, lest he behave illegally. Go now, for I am sleepy and bloated with beer.
Put out the lamps, toad, said he to Abd-Jabba, stretched himself out on the bed, covered himself with his coat, and fell asleep with his mouth open and awry. Jacob might sleep where he would. He mounted to the roof, laid himself down on a coverlet under the awning of a straw hut, and thought of Rachel's eyes, until sleep kissed his own. Chapter 5. Serving Laban. How long did Jacob stay with Laban? This was the beginning of Jacob's sojourn in Laban's country, and in the land of Aram Naharaim, which in his private thinking he called Cornugia, at first because it was from the beginning the lower world for him, whither for a while he had once wandered, but afterwards because in the course of years this stream-circumscribed land proved that it could hold its man fast. It turned out to be literally and actually the land whence one never more returned. For what does one mean by never more? One means, at least approximately, until the ego no longer retains its form and its condition, is no longer itself. A return after 25 years no longer concerns the ego, which, when it departed, thought to return in 30 years, or at most in 3, and take up its life where it was interrupted. To return thus is for that ego to return nevermore. 25 years are not an interval. They are life itself. They are, if they occur in a man's young years, life's kernel and core. And if Jacob lived a long time after his return, and passed through his highest and his hardest times, for he was precisely reckoned 106 years old, when, once more a dweller in that lower world, he solemnly departed this life, yet one may say that he dreamed the dream which was his life down yonder in Laban's house, in the land of Aram. For there he loved, he married, and there 4 women bore him his children down to the youngest, 12 in number. There he grew heavy with increase and stately with possessions. But the youth who had set forth never returned. It was a gray-haired man of 55, a roving eastern sheik, who returned to the west as a foreign land and moved towards Shechem. That Jacob sojourned 25 years with Laban is demonstrably true, and the certain result of any unbiased investigation. Song and story display a looseness of thought more excusable in them than it would be in ourselves. They would have it that Jacob spent 20 years in all with Laban, 14, and then 6. They adhere to the view that he had demanded his freedom of Laban for 7 years before he broke the dusty bolt and fled, but that Laban had never yielded, always binding him over under new conditions for a longer space. The time when this happened is fixed by the phrase, "when Rachel had borne Joseph." But when did that happen? If only 14 years had passed, then in these 14, or precisely speaking, in the last 7 of them, all 12 children, including Dinah and Joseph, and only excepting Benjamin, must have been born. This would not be impossible in itself, considering that 4 women were in activity, according to the order of birth ordained by God, but the fact was otherwise. For the sweet-toothed Asher, 5 years older than Joseph, was born after the end of the 2nd 7 years, that is, in the 8th year of wedlock. And a detailed consideration will show that Joseph could not have been born less than 2 years after the birth of the sea-loving Zebulun, namely in the 13th year of wedlock, and the 20th of the sojourn at Haran. How could it be otherwise? For he was a child of Jacob's old age. Jacob must have been at least 50 years old when his darling was born, and in consequence must have already spent 20 years with Laban. But of these 20, only 2x7, or 14 years, were years of actual service, so that between them and the time of giving notice and signing the new contract lie a further 6 years not covered by contract, a quiet passage of time which, from the point of view of Jacob's ultimate riches, must be reckoned with the last 5, during which another contract obtained. For though these years may afford the best and most convincing explanation of the man's extraordinary increase, yet, After all, they are not space enough in which to accumulate a fortune, the magnitude of which has been celebrated in song and story. Granted that much exaggeration had crept in. For instance, the statement that Jacob had 200,000 sheep is obviously impossible to believe. But there must have been many thousand, to say nothing of his other cattle, his slaves, his gold and silver. Laban's words when he overtook his son-in-law on the flight, that he might restore what he had stolen by day and stolen by night, would not have a shadow of justification. They would be meaningless if Jacob's riches had been founded merely on the last contract with Laban. If he had not already, in the aforementioned interval, done much business for himself, and laid the foundations of his later fortunes. 25 years. To Jacob they passed like a dream, as life passes for the living, in desire and attainment, in expectation, disillusion, fulfillment, a succession of days which he does not count, each of which gives what it has to give, and in waiting and striving, patience and impatience retreat one by one into the past and melt into larger units, into months, years, and decades, each of which in the end is like a single day. It is a question whether monotony or organized variation makes the time pass more swiftly. In any case, it is a matter of the passage of time. The living creature urges forwards. He strives to put time behind him. He strives at bottom towards death, thinking that he is striving towards the various goals and turning points of his life. And though time for him is articulated and divided into epochs, in another sense it is uniform, because it is his time, moving on always under the constant sign of his own ego, so that for him the passage of time and of life are always attended by two favoring powers, uniformity and articulation. In the end, it is an arbitrary business, this dividing up of time, not greatly different from drawing lines in water. One can draw them so, or again so, and even as one draws, the water flows together again into uniformity. We have divided the 5 times 5 years of Jacob's sojourn at Haran into 20 and 5, and again into 14 and 6 and 5. But he might himself have divided them into the first 7 years, then the 13 in which the children were coming, and then the 5 final ones which completed the term, just as the 5 intercalated days complete the 12 times 30 of the solar year. He might so reckon, or even otherwise. At all events, there were 25 years in all, uniform not only because they were Jacob's years, but because in all outward circumstances they were just alike, and any variation they showed in the point of view was not sufficient to stem the flow of their uniformity.